Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null. And I'll tell you so.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. I'm speaking on a telephone, and we'll probably be on a phone for the rest of this week, as I don't have power in my home yet. Today, the latest on what exercise does for us, especially if you're pregnant, and how you can fight a real deadly disease, the fatty liver disease. It's epidemic. New information, universities of Oxford, Southampton, Surrey on that. Probably 40 million Americans have it minimally, and it's a killer. Also, do you ever notice when someone's yawning, it's just contagious? Well, the University of Nottingham has figured out why, and for those of you who want to improve brain awareness and cognitive abilities, Aalto University, University of Helsinki in Finland, have figured out what to do. Well, that's important. I think we all want to improve brain awareness and cognition. Those are just some of the issues, but a lot more on health and healing. Now, we have a lot of people listening for the first time, and I'm really seeing an enormous input, especially younger people. So we start with health and nutrition, go to the environment, then I take a look at issues that you may not be aware of, and sometimes by people who share some insights that wouldn't be my own particular insights, like Lee Camp. Lee Camp has taken on Monsanto. Good for him. Monsanto needs to be taken on. I took on Monsanto, Seeds of Death. And by the way, that's played more than 90 times on Colorado Public Television, even though they criticize it, the local people, meaning the pro-GMO people, the chemical people, the trolls, didn't do any good. People wanted the information. So Lee takes them on also. You'll hear him. And also, I'm very concerned about how much money we don't have for infrastructure. We don't have to help people relocate out of harm's way. No money for that, not a nickel. You can't go anywhere in America and say, I have to move. Could you help me move to a safer place? And the answer is no. If we help you, then we got to help everyone, and we can't help anyone. Well, okay, where are you spending my money then? Well, you don't want to know. No, I do want to know. You sure? Well, I'm going to show you just some of the ways that they knowingly throw money away. And we're not talking about little amounts. We're talking about huge amounts. Enough money that all of the problems we have with our infrastructure could all be resolved. All of it. And yet not one thing is being done, nor will be done. And I'll get into that. Also, there's nothing like hypocrisy. And that's why I'm asking you to pull away from the Democratic, liberal community and the conservative Republican community, because they're both corporatists. Behind them are the powerful oligarchs and the special interest groups, the think tanks, the foundations, and the technocrat army is huge. You're talking about at least 500,000 people in Washington who were put there over the decades as the stay-behinds to make sure that a legacy is continued. But what happens when we're hammering the current president on immigration? Did we ever look back to see what Obama, Hillary, and Bill Clinton actually supported? You will, because I found the archival tape from a State of the Union address that got a standing ovation. Would that get a standing ovation or a big boo today? Also, I was sitting last night in line. I wanted to get some brown rice, and there was a place selling it. And I had to wait. They said, well, it'll be a 20-minute wait. Fine. So I'm waiting. There's a group of people, younger people, I'm saying in their 20s. And boy, they were all talking about, you know, tearing down these monuments of racism and destruction and all the people they should tear it down. I didn't say anything. I wasn't invited to, and it wasn't my place. But today I'm going to share some thoughts about what happens when we use reaction instead of reason, when our limbic brain, our reptilian brain, speaks on our behalf instead of something that's more enlightened. I'm going to give you my own commentary about a nation that loses perception of reality. I think you'll find it interesting. And also, it'll reaffirm some historical lessons that younger people are simply clueless about. Functional illiterates on history, and culture, and religion, and spirituality, and, on body politics, and foreign policy, and cultural identification, and ethnics identifying within that culture. In fact, just about everything. And yet, boy, do they have the arrogance to say they know everything. They don't, as you'll find out. And I'm also going to play you a clip from someone who says the United States is stupid. Why? What are we stupid about? You'll hear. And also, commentary today from John Whitehead, constitutional lawyer, on what country is this? Forced blood draws, cavity searches, colonoscopies, without committing any crime, even being suspected of a crime? How did they get away with it? Why aren't anybody and any of the people talking about it? Why are we allowing this? And just how bad has the police state in America really gotten? You'll hear about that. So I don't know how much I'll get in. I'll get as much as I can. First off, from a Camilo Jose Cela University in Spain, they found that exercising while pregnant is good for both the mother and the baby. Spanish researchers have clarified doubts over the physical activity recommended during pregnancy. Now, their work highlights how exercise should be taken not only by healthy, previously active women, but it's also good for women to improve their overall lifestyles. There's a clear advantage to both mother and baby. Excessive weight gain, preeclampsia, gestational diabetes and cesarean section, and lower back pain and urinary incontinence are some of the risks of leading an unhealthy lifestyle during pregnancy. So a study carried out by the experts at the university, published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, JAMA, defines the physical exercise patterns during pregnancy which have shown major psychological and physiological benefits for maybe the baby and the mother. Quote, the percentage of women who meet the recommendations for exercise during pregnancy is very, very low. This is due in part to uncertainty about what type of exercise should be recommended and which should be avoided. However, the new study confirms there's a strong scientific evidence maintaining that moderate exercise every day during pregnancy is safe and beneficial for both. And it also helps keep the excess weight off and also lowers the risk of premature birth and low birth weight. So a whole lot of good from exercising. Now, there's a problem that we have not seen historically, and that is non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. It just used to be virtually non-existent. But today it's epidemic. We're talking about tens upon tens of millions of Americans alone suffering from it. Why? It's our diet. It's high sugar foods and lots of soft drinks and high fructose corn syrup. According to an article in the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition, with three separate universities, Oxford, Southampton, and Surrey, all in the United Kingdom, they found that the omega-3 fatty acids fights fatty liver disease. Yeah, this was an important study. And the non-steroidal, or the, you know, omega-3 fatty acids, which are very important for us, help raise the red blood cell, DHA and RBC levels, and that showed significant improvement in liver metabolism and hepatic insulin sensitivity. So you want to have healthier liver, you want to reduce the problem of of the non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, then take in more DHA. Now, you're getting your DHA if you take fish oil, yes. But avocados, walnuts are terrific. Flaxseed oil is good. Hemp seed oil is good. You can get it from a plant-based diet. And this study was over 15 to 18 months of giving 4 grams a day. Now, I suggest 2 in the morning and 2 grams in the afternoon. And in fact, they reduced existing fatty liver content by 26%. Wow. That's tremendous. Just imagine the quality of life of people who had it reduced. They're going to have better insulin sensitivity, meaning they're going to have a more normal blood sugar level. They'll have more energy. So that's important. So take your essential fatty acids. Also, when we start to feel a little tired, and sometimes even if we're not tired, we yawn, especially if someone else yawns. And so the University of Nottingham has published a series of research papers to show that the human propensity for contagious yawning is triggered automatically by primitive reflexes in the primary motor cortex. That's the area of your brain responsible for motor function. And their study entitled The Neurobasis for Contagious Yawning was published in the academic journal Current Biology. And not that it's important, but it's just one of those, neuropsychiatric biology reactions where we know something now why it's caused, or before we all experienced it. Not that you can stop it. 95% of all people that yawn will have people around them yawn, even if they don't want to yawn. Now, really good news from Aalto University and University of Helsinki. They did some research, and they succeeded for the first time in affecting metacognition of a tactile working memory task by combining neural pathway imaging and magnetic stimulation of the brain. And understanding brain function can help in the development of people's conditions like multiple sclerosis, ALS, Alzheimer's. And by combining different brain research methods in a versatile manner, the researchers showed for the first time that the transcranial magnetic stimulation of the brain targeting the prefrontal cortex can improve a person's ability to evaluate their own performance in a tactile working memory situation. It's all with magnets. So the takeaway lay message, something we can all understand, is that magnetic stimulation of the brain improves awareness of your own cognitive abilities. Now, this takes me back to, there's a antecedent in a beginning moment when a guy came up to my ranch. This was the Healing Springs Ranch down in Tioga, Texas. And he had heard that there was a group of horses. He thought there was something like 26 horses that were going to have to be euthanized. And he had heard this from the local vet. But over a period of about 4 or 5 months, all these horses had regained their health. Well, that actually is very true. And they had been completely neglected. The woman didn't have enough money, she said, to pay for feed, though it turned out later in a court deposition she had owned a fast food franchise in another state that was very profitable. But anyhow, the horses were, for all intents and purposes, too weak to get up off the ground. And he came over and he was having a conversation. Well, what did you feed him? How did you feed him? I said, well, I got this gigantic bottles, and I put these large syringes on them with rubber tips, and I fed him very powerful formulas, high in nutrients to get their muscle mass back, and I went through the branched amino acids and the whole formula I put together, and you just had to hold their head, but it was also a good time when you're holding their head, they're looking at you, and you can pet their neck and give them hugs, and so you reassure them that there's helps there. And I can't tell people enough why hugging and that tactile touch for an animal is so important because that's how they relate, that's how they learn trust. In any case, in time, they were all made completely healthy, and then I found a sanctuary up in Canada, big one, 3,600 acres, and they came down and took the animals up there so they could spend the rest of their life in a beautiful environment with other animals and be healthy. But in this conversation we had, he told me about an invention that he came up with. And I said, what's that? And he said, well, normally when a horse breaks a leg, they immediately euthanize it. They do it at all the racetracks. And because it's so difficult to get these horses to heal, they have so much weight and they have such little ankles, etc. And he said that instead, a French doctor was using magnets on legs that had been broken, and including the one that was in the movie, The Black Stallion, where there's a scene in the movie, I guess these three different horses, where a cobra is about to strike a kid that's passed out on the beach, and a horse comes up and stamps it to death, saves the kid's life. Anyhow, in reality, that he said that that horse broke its leg, and there was a specialist, a French doctor, who said, don't put the horse down, there's a way of saving it. And so this led to a whole series of conversations the whole day, and we're just sitting out there in the horse barn talking, and he's telling me what he's doing. And this is the middle of horse thoroughbred country in all of America. I mean, this is where there are 5,000 ranches. In fact, people, you go by a little tiny farmhouse in a huge barn, you'd see people eating hamburgers but feeding organic carrots and organic rice and special filtered water to their animals. Oh, they really gave them a good life. Nothing sprayed on their grass. They had to have special, you know, timothy and alfalfa and grasses. They wouldn't treat themselves that good. But he was going around there, and he was helping people who had animals that were sick using magnets. Jump ahead about 5 years. 5 years later, he shows up one day at the Tri-State Healing Center, which I had at that time. And he says he had been able to work this machine together. Very inventive guy, very smart. And it would pulse out an electromagnetic pulse based upon the frequency that the body needed in order to stimulate antiviral, antibacterial, and fibroblast healing capacity of bones. So we had a lot of people, so under some medical attention there, I asked some athletes who had sprains and, you know, who weren't sick, but if they'd like to be the guinea pigs, and they tried it, and it got them back their energy and helped them overcome pain and knee pain, etc. And then I said, why don't you work out a formulation that could help people with depression and anxiety and pain in the cranial area and migraines and facial pain? And he hadn't done it at that time, but about 2 years later, he did that, and it worked also. Now, at the time, this didn't exist. They had tins that some doctors were using, little straps you put on your forehead, and gives you a slight little pulse. And that relieved a lot of pain. It legitimately worked. And then there was a doctor out in, I think it was in Kansas, who had strong magnets, generally about 5,000 to 10,000 gals, and in a little block, it set up like a book frame. And you'd put this at the base of your head when you were sleeping at night, and it would pulse into the cerebellum and into the cranium, and it would help relieve depression and headache. And I don't know of any studies on it, but then I started looking at the scientific literature, and wow, the Russians have been doing an enormous amount of research on this. They had done over 500 studies. In fact, I did a paper with over 500 scientific references on the healing power of magnets. The trouble at that time was Americans were looking only at the American scientific literature and finding little to nothing. Give you an example of this. When I had heard about a doctor, a Niehans in Switzerland, who was able to help people rejuvenate who had been living unhealthy lifestyles, John F. Kennedy, Winston Churchill, Marlene Dietrich, all these people, had gone to the Niehans clinic, and he would give him some kind of fetal injections. Well, he was gone, but there was a Dr. Klaus Martin in Bavaria and a Dr. Joseph Essels, who were both doing that. There's also Dr. Golwag, who was doing it. So this was being done. So I went over to Germany, and I went to the clinic, and I spent a long time there because I had to interview every one of the patients. And what I found remarkable is not one single patient there was interested in being healthy as a lifestyle, meaning they all smoke and drank and ate garbage. But every 5 years, they would come back and get these injections of these fetal live cells, and that would rejuvenate them. In effect, they were getting, they were getting the stem cells that would differentiate into what their body needed. So if you had a damaged kidney, or if you had a damaged heart, or damaged eyes, this would help that particular one. And they had put tracers on this. They had put a tracer that could trace that when it went into the body, theoretically, it should have just gone everywhere and been dissipated very quickly. But it wouldn't. It would predominantly go to the area where you needed it. And I thought that was remarkable. And this one doctor said to me, some of the photographs of this visit, by the way, are up on my website. He said, why don't you go over to the University of Heidelberg and also go to the Veterinarian Research Library? And I did. I found over 600 studies in the peer-reviewed literature about how these injectables were really rejuvenating tissue. And these were the most respected publications, scientific publications in Europe. And what was remarkable to me is before I left, I'd contacted the FDA, and I said, what do we have in the United States in our scientific literature on the healing power of these placental cells, sheep cells? They said, nothing. It's just quackery. There's no science behind it. I said, really? And here they were. There were 600 studies at one University of Heidelberg alone. So I brought all of it back, but I got some very positive feedback about this whole process. In any case, but nobody was interested in preventing the diseases. They just wanted to go off and get treated after they had gotten themselves sick. The treatments were around $5,000, and not that expensive considering what they would do. So the question is, what would have happened had a person lived a healthy life, had some damage to a system, needed help, and then gotten that? How much better would that person have been? The trouble is I found no one willing to say that they'd stop any of their unhealthy habits. So, in any case, I came back. Now, when I got back, I was curious again, because now I knew that either I had been intentionally misled or they were simply ignorant. And I believe that it was both. I believe they're biased that anything not created in America couldn't be legitimate. That's simply a built-in bias to our own nationalistic scientific fervor that we have to do everything right and first or best versus reality. And so I tried it a different way. I went up to the American Cancer Society, and there's a man named G. Cognon Woods, and he was the official overseer of all things legitimate. And they had a big book. And this was the Unproven Methods of Cancer Management book. And if you were in that book, you were a quack. So there were five names I gave him. And I said, could you please tell me what the basis of their being called unscientific? And one was Dr. Joseph Issels. One was Dr. Manuel Rivisi, Dr. Lawrence Burton, Dr. Virginia Livingston Wheeler, and Dr. Stanislav Brzezinski. And interesting, all five were in the book. And I said, okay, now, what criteria must you meet in order to get into your book? And so he told me, well, you've got to make promises, and you've got to charge lots of money, and it's got to be secret, and and you can't let anyone know what your formulas are, and you don't have legitimate degrees. And he went through these, and I said, okay. So I went down each one, and I showed him that not a single one of the ways that could get you in their book did they meet, not a single one. They were legitimate medical doctors. They had published in peer-reviewed literature dozens and hundreds of times in the case of Brzezinski. They had presented before scientific conferences. There was nothing secret. These people were not wealthy. They frequently didn't charge at all. So I asked him, so it looks like you have been misadvised. What is the article against or the criticism against, for example, Joseph Issels in Germany? Because he had the highest success rate in the world forever with curing terminal cancer. So terminal cancer in the United States was zero, meaning if you had terminal cancer, end stage, intractable cancer, you were going to die. But Issels had a 16.6% cure rate, meaning when you showed up at his clinic, having been diagnosed or treated somewhere else, and it failed, 5 years later, you would have no cancer in your body. Now, he showed me one article. That's it. One article from a from one of these National Enquirer type publications, critical of him. I said, "Well, have you met Dr. Issels? Did you look at his patient records?" "Nope." "Have you ever spoken to any of his patients?" "Nope." "Have you spoken with any of the physicians that treated his patients who got recovered and then went back to those patients or doctors?" "Nope." "So you've never seen a man, never spoken to a man, never seen a patient, never spoken to a patient, never read any of his writings, never looked at any of his peer-reviewed literature, and yet you're condemning him?" "Yep." And they didn't change. So much for the American Cancer Society. So I went to Issels. And the first thing that happened was that I didn't know I was there, meaning I got out of the car. Car let me out, and I'm looking around. I'm looking for a hospital. I don't see one. Mind you, everyone who went there was terminally ill. And I walked up, and there was this chalet there, and old. You could smell the wood. And I walked in these big plank floors and big overhead oak beams, and no one was there. It was only, I think, three stories high, and I walked up the main steps, and I'm calling out, "Anyone here?" "No one." But at the top of the third floor, down at the end, I see a guy putting on his running shoes. I said, "Hey, speak English?" "Yeah, I'm from the United States." I said, "Oh, what do you do?" He said, "I'm a dentist." I said, "I seem to have gotten lost here. I'm looking for Dr. Joseph Issels." He said, "This is it." I said, "This is it? This is a hospital?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Where is he?" He said, "He's up with all the patients." I said, "These are all terminally ill patients." He said, "Oh, yeah. Everyone who comes here is terminally ill." "Where are they at?" "They're up on the mountain." "Which mountain?" "Come with me. I'm going up there now." So we go down the steps, and we go up this little area. It's a pretty good hike, a couple hundred feet. And there's a plateau overlooking Tegernsee Lake, this beautiful lake. And here are all these people. I'm guesstimating maybe around 50. And they're all sitting there. And there's a bunch of nurses and people going around drawing blood. And then here's this really tall guy. He looks like the Lion King. This long, flowing white hair down to his shoulders and big guy. And I'm just standing off to the side. And he tells everyone to relax and close their eyes. And then one of the people put on the music of the Overture of 1812. And he says, "Now visualize," while the music is low, for about 2 minutes, he says, "Visualize yourself at the beginning of a valley. This is the valley of death. Now visualize the horse. Do you want a white horse? Do you want a black horse? Do you want a white outfit? Do you want a black outfit? But you've got a sword in both hands. And you're going to walk your horse through that valley. And as you go, the horse is going to pick up its pace, and you're going to look into the eyes of death. And all those creatures in front of you, those are all cancer cells. And they're there to kill you. But not today. Today, you will be victorious." And with that, the Overture of 1812, you talk about, whoa. I was standing right by the speaker. I had to get out of the way. It was so moving. And I'm watching the back of the people. I'm in the back. I'm watching their body, and you could see their body moving. I mean, they were really into this. And this went on for around 12 minutes. And then they went back and took their blood again. And then they had a picnic. They had all these raw salads and juices. They had all kinds of juices. And people had a lovely time. And then he came over to me, and I said, I'm here to see what this is about. He said, fine. And he had over 50,000 patient records open to any scientist, any public health official. Doctors came from around the world to see what he was doing, and he showed me his magnetic machine. He designed a machine that looked like something out of an old sci-fi film. It was like a tube, and your whole body was inside this tube, but it pulsed magnetic pulses into the body at different frequencies that he said that he found from Wilhelm Reif, Royal Reif. And interesting, because just in 2 weeks I'm going to meet someone who is going to give me a little demonstration. They believe they have perfected that formula. By the way, no one that I've met, and I met dozens of people over the decades at the Institute of Biology, where I was a research fellow, who would come and say, you know, I'm from UCLA, and I'm blah, 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 and they, indeed they were. I checked their credentials, and I can't do this research out there. It's just too controversial, but I heard that you do some psi research, and I said, I do, and that, you know, people like Douglas Dean and Edward Graff and a lot of people have come here to do work. I said, they have. And I do health and nutrition and anti-aging research as my primary. But on the side, quietly, I do all the psi research. So, well, I think I've discovered the right frequencies, and they'd try stuff, and it never worked. Not once. Though I did meet his personal assistant and his nurse. She had all these slides, and I saw them. And with my, I didn't get them, but I saw them and had a long conversation, a whole day conversation with her about what kind of man he was. And there's definitely a need to do a documentary on that man. He's one of the great geniuses of all times. And he cured a lot of people, and that was his problem. He cured them at the wrong time. He was the right person with the right idea. He had the wrong support system, and it was not the right time. So they destroyed him, but not before he had documented. But no one ever knew what happened to his documentation. I actually saw it. It was in just thousands and thousands of slides and the medical records of these people. Anyhow, that was before. Jump ahead. So here's Issels, and he's putting people in these machines, and he's using Lincoln's bacteriophage and all of Koch's work. Anyone who'd done anything important, he had seen whether or not it worked and incorporated. He had the most multidisciplinary approach to cancer of anyone in history. Juicing, getting rid of the mercury fillings in your mouth, the very first thing you do. You come in, if you had any local focal infection, you had to get rid of those cavities because the body needed 100% of its immune system on the cancer, not on arthritis in the knee and not on infections in the jaw or, you know, bad bacteria in the gut. He was doing probiotics long before anyone else ever mentioned this. So anyhow, here I'm having a chance to have a whole 10 days speaking every day with people who had come who were otherwise going to die. And the most interesting person was a woman from Houston whose husband was a leading oncologist, whose two sons were oncologists. And when she was diagnosed with terminal cancer, the family said, take a final trip around the world. And she thought about that. And because they said, there's nothing we can do, and we don't want you taking experimental drugs because they never work. But a trip would be a wonderful way to, you know, pass over. And she said, no, I heard about this place. And she went to see Issels. And Issels had cured her of her terminal cancer. Then she stayed on because her family wasn't happy about it. She said, could you imagine? My husband is angry at me at being around a quack and with unproven methods. And I said to him over the telephone, this quack with unproven methods has cured me of cancer that you and all the people at MD Anderson could not do. So go screw yourself. And she hung up, she said, and she hadn't talked to her husband or son since. Screw him, she said. They would be happy, she said this to me, they would be happier if I would have died with orthodoxy than be cured with alternative therapy. She said that to me. She said, so they can all go screw themselves. The entire community I grew up in, the entire cancer community of Texas is like that, she said. Closed-minded, arrogant. And so she was staying there. I guess she had been there for about 9 months when I met her, helping people coming from America and a couple other countries, because she spoke three languages, so they could, she could help them with the protocols. And Mrs. Hissel, who's still alive, by the way, she's out, I believe, in either Arizona or California. Wonderful human being. She's a brilliant, brilliant woman. But he was a certified genius. And here all these people are alive and well. And a Dr. Audier of Leiden University came in and did a report on him and published it in a peer-reviewed journal, the highest confirmed cancer cure rate in world history, wiping away everyone. No one in the world has ever touched what Joseph Hissel did. No one's got the brains. You could take all of the IQ idiots at Sloan Kettering and all these other places that are filled with arrogance and hubris, never apologize when people die under their care, that maybe their care is wrong, maybe their protocols are wrong, maybe their arrogance is wrong. No, no. And this man beat them all. So just remember that. The greatest person in world history of curing cancer was Dr. Joseph Hissel, period. But, and they published it, but did the American Cancer Society correct itself? No, it didn't correct itself ever. But then a producer, his name was Higginson, Gordon Higginson. He was a famous author also, and he worked for the BBC. And he heard about him, and he went over there with a team, and they not only work with him, but they also... they did a documentary on him. The documentary was called Go Climb the Mountain. It took a long time to do because they had to track down all of these people who had been treated to see were they still alive or had they died. And they found out they were still alive all over the world. And then they presented the documentary, and a man named Singer blocked it at the head of the BBC. And nothing they could do, even as a senior producer, award-winning producer, could he get it on the air. And turns out there were some people within the medical community there who were blocking it. And they had gone to Hissel's clinic, and they just mocked him. So I went to England, and I confronted them, each one of them. And I said, is it true that you said that this man has no value, but did you take the time to look at the patient records and interview the patients? I heard you were in there and out in just one day. How can you look at 55,000 patient records in one day? And you also were selected based upon your biases. Now, I just kept confronting him over and over again and recorded all of it, by the way. In any case, so it was just, it was one of these sham, it was like the Warren Commissioner, the 9/11, you know, you'd have to be brain dead. Sticking an ice pick through your brain and moving the white matter around if there's any left to believe anything about 9/11 Commission report in any case. But as Mr. Keene, who was the head of the report, co-head of the report, who's also said the same, it was a complete waste and it was fraudulent. In any case, but the truth was there. So now a Dutch journalist published an article about why was the BBC suppressing a potential cancer cure. And that forced them politically to air it. And it was the biggest hit, the most watched documentary in BBC history. It was called Go Climb the Mountain. You didn't hear a word about that in the United States. And it exonerated him and showed what he was really about. It never affected him. He was a very humble man. He was a very quiet man. Very much at peace with himself. Isn't it amazing that we have all these stupid runs for the cure, but no one ever asks, where's the money go? And we have all this billions upon hundreds of billions of dollars being spent every year, and they're not curing anybody, unless it's a simple cancer, clear cell toxic skin cancer, clear cell adenoma, or non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. But the serious cancers, they've got no good results with. Lung cancer, pancreatic cancer, breast cancer, no. And if you should survive, 100% of the credit is given to the therapy and none to you. Zero to you and what you might be doing, and 100% to them. That's hubris. In any case, that was kind of a one little thought leads to another, leads to another, leads to another. It all came back to the idea that that man later came back, and I saw him use magnets, stimulating people for about a half hour to 45 minutes, and with frequencies that helped overcome all kinds of neurological problems. And then one day, he was gone. Don't know what happened to him, couldn't reach him. I do remember him saying that in one of our conversations, you know, there, if word gets out, I'm doing this very quietly, but word gets out that anybody's getting help, the authority's going to be all over me. So I guess, you know, he split. But now they're confirming what he did long time ago, magnets helping. Might also mention that vitamin E deficiency can lead to increased colorectal cancer risk. This is a meta-analysis, meaning from many different studies, 11 studies, and they took a long time from 1950 to 2016. They looked at thousands and thousands of colorectal patients, and they found that if you have a deficiency of vitamin E, then you're far more likely to end up with colorectal cancer risk. So make sure you're getting 400 to 800 units a day of mixed tocopherols. All right, alpha tocopherol and mixed are the best, and that will help you. And probiotic treatment erased peanut allergy in 70% of children. This is from Murdoch's Children Research Institute in Australia, and it says, last week, Australian scientists announced a major breakthrough in treating peanut allergies, and it can last up for 4 years. And hundreds of Americans die each year, by the way, from food allergies, and around 200,000 of the estimated 15 million Americans with food allergies will wind up in the emergency room each year. Almost 6 million of those with food allergies in the United States are children, and peanuts are among the top 8 food allergens, including wheat, milk, eggs, soy, shellfish, and fish. So they found that probiotics made all the difference in the world. 70% improvement or got rid of their peanut allergies with probiotics. Good for them. So that's important. Well, I went a little over here today in my health nutrition discussion, but now I'm going to just take a quick break and come right back with my own commentary. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. I'm Gary Nall, talking on a telephone, have no power, sitting with a flashlight, and so kind of funny. If you grow up the way I did, and you grew up around rednecks and good old boys, you don't really focus upon what you don't have or inconveniences. You focus upon what you're gifted with, and you put your energy in a positive place. We can all whine, moan, blame, and complain, but I see a lot of people who just don't have time for that. There's just too much good to do in the world. And I'm glad we have a lot of good people in this world, a lot of good people in this audience. And one of those good people who follows me every day, Monday to Friday, is Utrice Lead. And just an anniversary coming up for Utrice on the Progressive Radio Network. She was on her sister station, WBAI, for 21 years. In the afternoon on Talkback, and it was outside of my program. This is the second most popular program on WBAI. And then she was off radio for a number of years and then came back almost 10 years ago. So she's got a huge audience, bigger than she ever had on BAI, and it's a very, very progressive audience. So just a happy anniversary to Eutrice Lead and who also made it through the storm on the East Coast of Florida, and look forward to hearing what she has to say today. Now, tonight at 7 p.m., I'm going to do part two of how to survive and rebuild your life after storms. What lesson can we learn? And because we have a universal audience, I'm going to talk about more than the people affected in Florida or Louisiana or Texas. I'm talking about the people everywhere in the world where you're impacted by environmental disasters. What to do. And what to do to prevent it, and what to do afterward, and the best places to live, and how to go to the next stage of your life and have a quality of life. That's at 7 p.m. tonight at prn.fm or progressiveradionetwork.com. You won't want to miss that. Now, this is for those people who feel that anything that they feel dishonors the original reputation should be tainted or destroyed. Now, there are people that I absolutely would agree we should never have commemorated them with anniversaries or holidays, including Columbus Day. Columbus was a bona fide genocidalist, and he was an exploiter at every level. And because of his exploitation down in Hispaniola, I've been to the actual community down in Hispaniola, and Hispaniola is two-thirds of the island, of which the Dominican Republic is on one side and Haiti is on the other. But when you consider how many native people from South America, Central America, the Caribbean, and North America were negatively impacted by the pioneers and the explorers and discoverers, estimates go as high as 100 million, which, by the way, next summer I'm going to be, and I forgot to mention this, but I'm going to invite five people from the audience who want to see how a documentary is made. I'm going to outfit an RV and for my radio show each day, plus my filming, and I'm hitting every Indian reservation in the United States, having the people of the reservation tell me about their culture and the history of their tribes and where they are today and how they've assimilated or not, or their health, their politics, their view of life today versus what it was historically. It'll be it's a massive project. It'll take me three months, but it'll be interesting because there are over 545 tribes still existing in the United States, some very tiny, some larger. But in any case, that's coming up. So when you consider what we've done to these great and wonderful human beings, anybody who supported that is a genocidalist. But before we go out and start any more denunciations, we should have a moment of pause. And we should reflect and then deconstruct our own arguments. Ask ourselves, am I just reacting to something or am I using reason? Do I know the real history? Or have I simply accepted the history or information I have, which can be very biased and wrong? For example, I wouldn't suggest you go down and destroy the Lincoln Memorial, but I would suggest that we start doing a whole new program on each one of the people, showing what they've done that we could all agree would have been to the betterment of all humans, but don't leave out their limited side, the negative side. For example, Abraham Lincoln believed in government censorship. He was a massive censor. He deported all of his critics, much what like some countries do today. He suspended habeas corpus. He supported the largest slaveholders in America. He supported taking the slaves back during slavery and using the police to do it. He founded America's first concentration camp. Now, you may not know that America had a concentration camp. It was called Camp Douglas. But the people who were there were Native Americans. It was called, today it would be called Lincoln's Guantanamo. He had no love for any Native American. In fact, he hung more of them than anyone else, including Andrew Jackson. He also provided the largest land grab and theft in American history from the Navajo and the Apache, and a lot more. Now, that does not mean everything he did was bad. It doesn't mean that he did not make construction of ideals at some level. But I'm showing you that in all these people, there are gross flaws. Albert Einstein had an affair with his cousin. President Eisenhower had an affair with his driver, Kay Summersby. FDR, Lucy Mercer, and it was his wife, Eleanor Roosevelt, who was superior to him intellectually and progressively, who found all of the letters. Martin Luther King, could you imagine where you could go with this? You could say if someone does not meet the ideals that we expect, then they should not be honored, and therefore we should take down their monuments. Okay, you're going to take down Martin Luther King monuments? You're going to dishonor his name? Because he had affairs, and because he was a minister and had multiple affairs, he should be held to a higher standard because he knew fully what he was doing, and he would never have accepted anyone else should be out having an affair. He was a flawed person, but he was also a great person. You must put into perspective what a person does in their life, and then also understand, yes, they're a human being, they have flaws. Do you destroy a person's reputation for their flaws and limitations, or do you put it in context? You also had John F. Kennedy. There's no president, including Bill Clinton. I didn't think that was possible because when I spoke with, in person, I spoke with Bill Clinton's mistress. Most of you don't know he had a mistress for 29 years. 29 years, including through his marriage to Hillary. And she's from Texas. She's a lawyer. In fact, she's considered the brightest lawyer in Texas. And she said that I asked her, why were you with Clinton all those years? And she gave me her explanations. And she said when he was attorney general, he bragged to her that he had already had 3,000 different liaisons with different women. 3,000 women when he was just attorney general of Arkansas? Okay. So take a look at everything that Clinton did, because there's a whole lot of negativity. Franklin Roosevelt, Martin Luther King, Thomas Jefferson, Sally Hemings. He had 200 slaves. He was also a drunk, and he didn't pay his debts. John F. Kennedy? Yeah, John F. Kennedy was out there assassinating the Diem brothers. Yeah, he until it came against him, he was a part of it. You had Mahatma Gandhi. He was notorious as abusing his wife. And also he had so-called spiritual marriages to two British women living in his ashram. Does that undermine what he did and said and the peace process of stopping the apartheid in India and 1947, getting the independence from 300-plus years of British rule? Think of all that he did that was good, but he was still a flawed person. Also, Malcolm X, Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill actually, and also Gandhi, gave pro-Hitler commentaries. Winston Churchill wanted Gandhi to die in prison. He was a big supporter of Rhodes, who was a massive racist, and really the father of apartheid in South Africa. Rhodes Scholarships. So everyone who's a Rhodes Scholarship, who's that? Wasn't there someone on, MSNBC who's a Rhodes Scholar? Shouldn't they denounce that scholarship and Rhodes and everything associated with it? He also believed in using chemical weapons against the Kurds, and he blamed the Jews for the rise of the Soviet Union, and he caused the death of 3 to 4 million Bengalis in the famine. And he said, quote, keep England white, and he supported eugenics like Margaret Sanger. Margaret Sanger was a rabid racist. You're going to tear down all of the Planned Parenthood centers? Going to defund it because she was a rabid racist and a eugenicist? Yeah. And President Washington had 100 slaves at his Mount Vernon. He did not pay his troops. He was considered a reckless general. Douglas MacArthur, he gave immunity to all of the war criminals, the Japanese war criminals, and there were a lot. Yeah. So just as an example, I could go through a whole lot more people. So maybe we should have a moment to bring in the historians and scholars to write the true history of each person, and on one side, put the things they have done that are commemorable, important, motivating, freeing, liberating, and on the other part, put the things that they have done which are demeaning and lessening of them as a human being. And then you have at least perspective. Then you can make up your mind what you want to do, at least when you put it into a broader context. Because right now, I don't see anyone, zero people in public office that deserve to be there, who are representing us. I do not see these radical rabbit groups, left or right, representing the actual America we all want to be a part of. I see them adhering to their own ideological, immature, and frequently anarchistic views. They pride themselves on what they tear down. They can't show you a damn thing they build up. They pride themselves on sticking their thumb into a person's sore. They cannot show you a wound they've healed. Take a look at the people. It's like a local station board people. The people who claim to be experts, claim to be helping, and they're not a damn thing ever gets done that's constructive. So that's where we're at. So it's time to take a breath, pull back, get perspective before we continue our hate campaigns. The hate campaigns will not rebuild America. Putting it in perspective and deciding what we should honor and what we should not, could. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.